Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
What a way to kick off the weekend. A massive thank you to the superstar Jenny Green. Back tomorrow with the Electric Disco at 7 o'clock. It's Friday, the 26th of February, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, another sprint finish, another win for Ireland's Sam Bennett.
Oh, and lots of slammed handlebars, but power will count, power will out. And it has come to the most powerful man out there at the moment. Sam Bennett makes it count, Brian.
We've news on Damien Duff's replacement from Alan Caldley and Fergal Brennan, plus the FAI's new boss on football without the champagne.
Look, my management style is a very open and transparent one. You know, I come from Yorkshire, the north of England. I like to think that I am honest, transparent and straightforward. I'm not afraid to take difficult decisions, and I understand that that will need to be done.
There's live rugby and a World Cup trip to plan with Dunica. Feels a bit soon though. Jane Mangan on racing, Irish boxers in action, plus Dick Clerkin and Damien Lawler on Congress as a new GAA president is installed.
Absolutely thrilled to be taking over tomorrow and really, really looking forward to it, Marty, and getting started on the job and hopefully getting us back on the fields as quickly as possible. And yes, isolation is what it is, but it's no different or no more onerous than what everybody else in society is doing. So let's just simply get on with it.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Marie, what a weekend of sport ahead, and already we've been busy. All the Irish out doing it's, incredibly well.
Yeah, I think it's actually been made even better by the sunny weather, I have to say. I mean, what better things to do on a sunny day than sit inside and watch sport? So Sam Bennett picked up his second win on the UAE tour when he was first home on stage six. Bennett took a sprint finish ahead of Elia Viviani and Pascal Ackermann, and Tadej Pogačar is leading on general classification. As well as that, we had some Irish in boxing action. Aoife O'Rourke has been beaten, unfortunately, in her middleweight semi-final in the multi-nations tournament in Sofia. The Ross Commonwealth woman lost out to an opponent from the US, and flyweight Brendan Irvine had to settle for a bronze medal after an injury forced him to pull out of his semi-final. And we heard from Craig Breen yesterday. He was in action today and he lies in second place after the opening two stages of the Arctic Rally Finland behind Hyundai teammate Otto Tanak. And there is plenty happening. There is going to be a full weekend of sport, loads of rugby, and we're going to get to all of that very, very soon, because we didn't get to go through all of the rugby yesterday. So we will do that. But we have to go to GAA now because it's Congress time.
Congress.
So that means that our GAA journalists earned their cross. They are very busy trying to decipher what the 47 motions that are going to that were approved for Congress are going to be all about. Now, there is 37 that will be debated and voted on. Damien Lawler joins us to tell us which are the really important ones. And Dick Clerkin is also with us as well, former Monaghan football. Damien, to you first, because you're a veteran now of Congress. What are the so out of the 37
anybody's ever said to me?
Damien, I'm sure you've heard worse.
Damien, I once brought a work experience student to Congress Saturday, and he fell asleep. He was snoring and everything, and there was a man beside him, and he elbowed him to wake him up, and like he was outraged that this was such an important thing, and the young lad had fallen asleep in the middle of it.
So did the young lad enjoy his one day in journalism?
Do you know what? He came in on work experience to the Sunday Independent, and he was a mad Liverpool fan now, like absolutely mad Liverpool. And he wanted to work with Dion Fanning, but Dion was based in the UK, so he got stuck with me. And I brought him to a rugby press conference, and Rob Kearney was up for interview, and he didn't know who Rob Kearney was.
Oh,
he was just so
God.
He was so focused on soccer. He didn't know who Rob Kearney was, and he fell asleep in Congress. I must find out what he's doing now, actually.
Well, look, I wouldn't say he's the only person to fall asleep in Congress over the years, Marie, and I'd say I've come close myself there. The great thing about it from a journalist point of view is traditionally there were a two-day event, and on the Friday evening, from a contact point of view, unbelievably valuable to a journalist, to be honest with you, because it's where you meet people and get their trust and you get a load of information. And back in the good old days when I started off first, a lot of the deals were done on the Friday night, to be honest with you. And then you go in Saturday morning, and as a kid reporter going in there, I was just taken aback by the amount of times that delegates voted no to stuff. Now, that has really changed. I've seen a real change in that over the last 10 years, guys. There's a real open-mindedness. There's a real striving for change, but not just for the sake of it. Like, and Dick will fill you in there in a few minutes as well. Your motions have to be worded exactly right to get through. So it's not just the case of putting a motion forward. It has to be technically proficient and technically correct to get through. But over the years, there's been some big deals. I remember the GPA, one of the GPA founders, Donal Leary, kind of gatecrashed the Congress. That caused the ruckus. Rule 42, that was massive, massive, massive at the time. The protesters on the way into Congress giving out about potentially Rule 42 being changed, huge. Rule 21 as well, you know. So history has been made at Congresses, so you couldn't take them lightly. But really, it's just kind of a housekeeping matters for getting all the kind of motions and all the business at hand into line. But I have to say, over the last 10 years, it's been a vehicle for serious, serious change. And sometimes people will say the GEA don't change enough. I'd actually disagree with that. I think sometimes the GEA changed too often now. And that's an unbelievable change in thinking over the last decade.
OK, so then, Damien, over the weekend, what are we expecting to be talking about, really? What are the contentious ones? What are the ones that are going to garner the most attention?
All right. Well, as you say, Marie, there's 47 down initially. 10 of those are gone to Special Congress. A lot of them are kind of basic ones, county development officers and stuff like that. But the real important one there is the new proposed football championship systems. There's a couple of motions being pushed back. So this weekend, tomorrow, obviously Larry McCarthy's taken over from John Horan. And that's going to be momentous enough in itself. But GAA Congress tomorrow is going to focus on kind of crazy motions like having preventing joint captains lifting trophies. There's also increased punishment for cynical fouls. That's a huge one. Streamlining of county championships to facilitate split season. That's going to be a massive one as well. And then Dick's committee and the medical and safety committee have one on concussions. So maybe just start off with that first. That's come to the table before, but I think the committee, you know, motion 27 this time around, the wording looks to be perfect for me. It's extending the temporary substitution definition to players with suspected head injuries, that they're taken from the field without the need to use a full substitution.
Damien, I might bring Dick in on this just give us a bit of a...
into line with other sports, so yeah, definitely.
Dick, just tell us about the concussion motion and why it needs to be brought in.
Good evening, Marie Donegan. Congress veteran Damien, how are you doing? No, obviously, like, the whole, you know, concept of concussion over the last number of years is just continuing to grab attention, and no more so at the minute when you look across at other sports and what they're trying to do to develop the rules and make their games safer, increase awareness. And the GAA has been no different. And I suppose I've been chairperson of the medical and welfare committee over the last 3 years, and it was on the agenda, but in terms of making a rule change to really address a major rule change, you know, there wasn't just the confidence or the maybe it wasn't the right time to do it, because a rule change like this, as I keep reminding people, has to be applicable not just at top inter-county level where you've got the full backing of medical teams and all of that. It has to be at a junior B game down the country on a Wednesday evening or an underage game. So as Damien correctly said, the wording and how that is implemented, interpreted is so important. So an awful lot of time went through speaking to all stakeholders, GPA, the referees, the you know, Doctors Association and the Rules Committee, to make sure that there was nothing missed. And I can tell you now that Damien said the wording is very simple and looks good, but that there's an awful lot of work went into that to make it what it was, and a lot of people had different cuts of different versions to end up with that. You know, we felt, as I came from the point of view as a player, you know, we've all played the game, we've all experienced it, if not concussions, heavy injuries, and we all know what you're battling with as a player in terms of when you go down with an injury, you don't want to come off. And the rules that we have at the minute there make it very difficult for a player to sort of say, right, I don't think I'm right here, I'm going to come off and get looked at properly, because at the minute it's a full substitution and they're not back on the field. So we felt, you know, it was a natural step, the way the whole conversation around concussion is, give players, give medics, give mentors that bit of time and space to assess the player properly and then make a call whether they're fit to return or not. And, you know, I'm very hopeful, and it seems we've got good support so far, so I'm very hopeful it'll get over the line tomorrow.
Dick, I've seen it in my own sport and the importance of, you know, looking after player welfare, and especially in this area. But how do you police it from maybe inter-county level all the way down to grassroots? I know with rugby, it was a big stumbling block that you needed independent doctors to make that assessment.
Yeah, well, look, I suppose if you look at what the current state of play with the GAA is, that the overriding rule is, if in doubt, pull them out. And that's very simplistic, and it works. But equally, going back to that situation where the player goes down with a suspected hand injury in the middle of the pitch and that pressure situation, and make a call within 30 seconds or a minute, you know, listening to medics, listening to players, and listening to data, the right decision maybe isn't always been taken because of that ambition or determination of the player to stay on the pitch. So we feel that, you know, allowing this, and again, the next step from this, and work is already going behind the scenes, sort of hoping that this will get passed, is to develop a standard assessment for GAA purposes that they then can implement it both with medical teams, but equally some guidance for non-medics that can look at the players and make a call, because that's the reality of our games. You know, people say, oh, you have to have the medics. That is not always the case. So just because you don't have that doesn't mean that you can't have a rule that allows people that bit of space and time to make better decisions, and hopefully the rule will do this.
Yeah, I think it's a very important one, and I'd say there's people the length and the breadth in the country as well who will have had experiences and wish that this rule was in place. Damien, tomorrow, what else? Are we looking at a black card? Are we going to have a split season? What's going to happen?
Yeah, well, OK, talking cynicism in the game, I suppose, first of all, in hurling, probably a much-needed change in some people's mind. It's undoubtedly the highest profile motion up for this weekend, and that's the clamping down on cynical fouls in hurling. I suppose looking at studies there, Marie, between 2017 and 2019, Professor Michael Haston did a study on it, and it just showed that nearly half the fouls were deliberate and cynical. And Brian McDonald from Athlone IT did a study on last year's 26 games, and out of 23 of them, the winners fouled more than the losers. So all the data is pointing towards this. Professional fouls need to be stopped. So you're looking at the proposed penalty for bow codes inside the 20-metre arc, where a clear goal-scoring opportunity has been denied, and also a 10-minute sin bin for hurling as well. Now, the sin bin was defeated last year, 82-18. So 12 months later, it's back on the table with a renewed gust of wind behind it, and certainly it's looking very possible that that could get through. GPA threw a curveball yesterday, saying that their membership didn't want it, but there was no surprise there. It would be probably like Turkey's voting for a second Christmas if players wanted our rules to go through, to be honest with you. So players inter-county at the highest level, they'll do anything to win. They're not going to vote for something like this. But I think there is support for it elsewhere. Split season, there's massive support for that as well. And hopefully that'll get a good airing in Congress tomorrow as well. One of the more peculiar motions is the joint captain being able to collect the trophy. Now, maybe Dick has views on that. It's described as a tidying up of protocols. It just means that one nominated player from the team is eligible to collect a trophy. Now, that's fine in most sports and it's very understandable, but the GAA is different to a lot of sports and it's very, very emotional. And sometimes you'll call up a volunteer from your club or your county to carry a cup. So I'm not so sure about that. Like when Ballymun won the Senior Football Championship last year, James McCarthy welcomed Paddy and John Small up with him. It was a very, very poignant moment for them because their dad, Declan, who was a club stalwart, had passed away 10 months previously. So all those scenes would be kind of replicated around Ireland because of the association that we are. So I'm not so sure about that. But it's up for grabs tomorrow. It's up for the vote. Split season's the way forward. That's Motion 12, drawing a clear line between club and inter-county campaigns. And if COVID brought any positives in terms of last year's GAA season, it was that. That's definitely the way forward. So they are the most important motions tomorrow. And after that, then, Larry McCarthy will do a virtual press conference with the media for the first time, but water off his back because he's been so used to that environment with New York and other committees over the years as well. You know, so that's the summary, I guess.
Dick, Larry McCarthy coming in tomorrow, taking over. How big a challenge does he have on his hands now?
Well, I think Damien touched on a very good point at the start there. The appetite for change that's in the GAA now. And if you're a president or somebody coming into an organisation that has sort of ambitions and has ideologies you want to do, it couldn't be a better time to come in because, you know, the door has been kicked open over the last number of years in terms of restructuring games, you know, the rules, you know, the notion of the black card, whereas there for so long, like, nothing changed and you felt that we'd never move on. So, you know, from what I don't know Larry that much, my father, and you know your own father, Marie, Tim knows Larry well, he'd be coming in, you know, like every president, wanting to make his mark, wanting to make make changes, and changes are needed, and there's a very fair wind blowing to do that. So I think, you know, if he's ambitious and wants to make changes, he couldn't get a better environment. I think John, as well, in terms of the role of the presidency, like, what a tough year to have to finish off, and I think most people would agree that he carried the role out impeccably. So in terms of the status and the stature of the role, he couldn't be taking it on at a better time, and in terms of the landscape to make change, it's all there for him. So it could be a very interesting 3 years,
Jake, it's going to be a very interesting few months as well. Now, we know that the last year, a lot of what has happened has been guided by NPHET and also by the COVID advisory group, which you're a part of. Mm. And just looking ahead to the next few months, and people are just, they just want information. They're trying to figure out, when are they going to be back? What's going to be back first? Is it going to be club? Is it going to be inter-county? What do you think, just given all the information that we have now?
Well, the biggest thing, and not to state the obvious, is time. And time, day by day, week by week, we're losing the calendar. Like, originally we were to be back by February. We're now at the end of February, and it's looking like there won't be a ball kick really in earnest till April, and that could mean that it's only inter-county. But if you take it on the basis that the one thing that's not going to change is that club players are not going to be allowed to play ahead of inter-county. So it's going to be very difficult to sort of say that, well, inter-county has to wait till after club, because nobody's really going to see the logic in that, with everybody just sitting on their hands until maybe June or July, until the club mass players are allowed to go through. You know, a lot of people, it worked last year just the way the thing felt, but I think everybody is just so impatient and wants to see action back on the pitch. So I think there still is that ambition, and John has rightly come out and said about it, that if and when the green light is there to get inter-county, whatever that, what that will be, remains to be seen, because, as I say, the time will dictate what you can play. But I think the logic still stands. You're likely going to have a month or 2 month window that only inter-county can play prior to the club. You're going to have to use that, you know, because you've lost enough of the year as it is, and try and cut your cloth to fit.
I think the problem, a lot of the problem with leaving the club till, or the club coming so late, is that when you look at clubs around the place, and I think especially around Dublin, you know, between men's and women's teams, you could have 15 teams in a club and they don't have floodlights and they're trying to find somewhere to train. So it's a very difficult situation for them as well, Dick.
It was, now, not to be making assumptions, but if you go back to last year, I would suspect that clubs will be allowed to open up and train in sort of, you know, it was at the time groups of 15, non-contact. So I don't think it'll be a case that whilst the inter-county is playing that the club players are sitting locked out of the ground. I would imagine that there will be an allowance for outside safe training on a non-contact base, as there was last year, if you remember, when we ramped up through the stages. So, you know, and that worked fine. I remember going back, the first train, I think it was the start of June last year, and you didn't. You're just so glad to get out kicking a ball, and you've done that for the first 3 or 4 weeks. So I would suspect clubs will have that whilst inter-county is playing, and, you know, if they had that at all, I think that'll get players away enough.
And Damien, just in, like, I was looking at a League of Ireland friendly game today, and we know that's coming back very soon and they're deemed elite. Are we expecting the GAA to ask for a change in their status so that they can be deemed elite?
Well, I think that's going to happen. I think from April the 4th, you know, reading between the lines on this report that they released during the week, which was as clear as mud, to be honest with you. But I think we become elite on April the 5th again. And I'm hoping that teams will be back training straight away. It'll be a four-week pre-season, that you could get the inter-county season up and running by early May, play a five-week league if that's possible, and go straight to Championship then. As Dick said, have your club players back training in non-contact pods initially, and then maybe going through the phases that they get back into contact training and they're allowed to play challenge games, maybe certainly locally, but that will come at a later date. I think now, I keep going back to last year and how much Micheál Martin and the government wanted Gaelic games for people's mental health and their well-being and their wellness. You can double that now this time around, as far as I'm concerned, because every day I just get inundated with text messages, as I'm sure you do, from underage coaches, from club coaches. What's the story? What's the story? And I know there's lobbying going on behind the scenes with Minister Chambers to try and get kids back as well. It's very, very important, because even in their non-contact pods, just to be among their friends and socialising again from an enjoyment perspective. It needs to happen very soon. But I think, to answer your question, we'll be elite again, in my opinion, from April the 5th if the case numbers go low and stay low. And I think then, hopefully, the government seem intent on not letting us back down to another lockdown, that the phases we rolled out would be very controlled, very slow. All the data would be monitored, but that you'd be able to proceed slowly. And if you think about it, counties are an elite setup, very, very carefully managed, not much mixing in the community and not much travelling around either for the foreseeable future. So it's the obvious way to go back, Marie.
And Dick, just like, you've obviously been on the COVID advisory group now for quite a while. And I think, OK, celebrations aside, OK, that happened and everyone is going to learn from that. But what have you learned? What are you going to do differently now as you approach a return to play?
Well, I think, listen, people, I think rightly so, give the GAA very great credit for how the last year went. But it wasn't a blemish-free record either. And that's sort of the time around October when, let's be honest, it was complacency. Everybody had dropped their guard in society. The pubs were starting to open up and everyone just sort of felt, well, we're out of this, it's over. And next thing, we got caught. And, you know, clubs, you know, you're seeing, you know, pitch invasions and, you know, crowded celebrations and then the rumours of after parties. And that happened. And there's no point in sticking our heads in the sand. It is. And I think it was just an overriding complacency. And, you know, we reacted very quickly, granted, and we got good credit for that. But we can't allow that happen again, because even now, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were all camped down in fear and all around lockdown. We're already now getting impatient and complacency starting to come back. You know, when I run through town there in Monaghan, it's where there was no lockdown, you know, the amount of people are out and about. So never take our eye off the ball at any stage and take nothing for granted, I think, is the biggest thing, Marie, and take, you know, every week and month as it comes, and don't make any assumptions about anything, and learn from the behaviours that went before, and how even people like to say that, you know, clubs can be trusted and players can be trusted. We know that if the circumstances aren't right, that isn't always be the case. So just to be on guard all the time.
Okay, well, hopefully the weeks and the months will go over very, very, very quickly. Dick Clerkin, thanks so much for joining us. And Damien Lawler, enjoy Congress tomorrow.
I'd love to go to Congress. 2FM.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On, Marie. We were talking, there is an awful lot of sport, but rugby is underway. Connacht are in action in Benetton over in Italy, and they are 14-7 down at half-time. They went out like a train, Kieran Marinion, Conor Fitzgerald, unbelievable pace of the game, but Della Hunt was sin-binned, and Benetton scored just before half-time. So they're just trailing at the moment, 14-17. I'd love to be a Connacht player at the moment. I'd say there'd be a good bit of bitterness that there's not one player within the Irish squad. So I'd say there's an awful lot of players going out there to make a bit of a statement. And to be fair, one of them, Bundy Aki, already looks like a bit of a pinball on the pitch. So that second half is about to get underway on TG Carr, if you want to flick it on to us. There's plenty of action. I suppose the big news is Joey Carberry's return to Munster. He's off the bench as they take on Cardiff. Jack O'Sullivan is another player I'm really interested in the back row, and Jack O'Donoghue will captain the squad. So they're underway tonight as well. That's
big,
a really
pressure on Joey, though, isn't there? Like, when you think of the narrative now that is surrounding him in the space of just like 3 days.
I was actually thinking that exact same thing today. And do you know what? I might think, and you're going to go, stop. Like, here we go. But if he left Joey Carberry on the bench today and didn't put him on, it's still a step forward. Like, I just think we're
give
trying
the
to
give people what they want, Donica.
No, just look after it. And look, and this, we always come back to it. Joey Carberry has been well looked after, and you know, as soon as he steps on that pitch, but he's a competitor, he'll want to go. And look, I just remember chatting to Ron O'Gara after he came back from a summer tour. Joe Schmidt brought him on a summer tour to Argentina, and he just would not stop talking about Joey Carberry, just the way he holds him, which is kind of unbelievable to hear from someone like from Rod. Ulster in action as well. They're taking on the Ospreys. Marcel Kutsia is out, but Robert Balakoon and Sean Reedy are back on the bench. And the big news is Jacob Stockdale. And this one I like probably a little bit. And we've seen it with Jack Conan coming into the Irish squad. Guys like Stockdale, guys like Bundiaki are being, and Josh van der Vleers with Leinster, sent out to their provinces, put in big performances, and you'll get rewarded. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. And then Leinster, they named their squad today. I mentioned Josh van der Vleer, really young, brilliant back row yet again. Josh Murphy and Scott Penny are quality. And then they can blood these younger players or more inexperienced guys, because you have the likes of Dev Toner, Scott Fardy, Sean Cronin. When you put those into the equation, and Luke McGrath, captain again, with Harry Byrne at 10, everyone's kind of chatting about him. But the one I'm excited about is Kieran Frawley. I don't think he gets enough of...
You do your best now to build him up, to be
fair. I'd love to see him playing more. I just want to see Kieran Frawley play more. And I think he could be a brilliant 10. But and then I hear other people that you'd respect for the kind of rugby eye talking about him. And I'm there... Let's just see a little bit more of this guy, you know. So, yeah, but it's all exciting. But it is Six Nations weekend. We went through our own game. But the big game that's probably everyone outside of the country is looking forward to is Wales versus England. So Wales win. They win a triple crown. England trying to get back on track. England made two changes. Had to go back on one because Courtney Laws picked up an injury. But Wales look strong. It's Wales' most experienced team ever, Wales, Marie. 902 caps. So they were able to bring in Jonathan Davis. Liam Williams is going back to full back. Josh Adams is back in the team. And Josh Navidi comes back in with Tipperick. So I actually can't wait to watch that. You know what's coming when England name a 6-2 bench. So that should be something special. But isn't it so funny? Like, everyone was going on. Remember at the start of the Six Nations, Wales are done. Wales are done. And look at them here tomorrow.
Isn't it interesting that they've got this really experienced squad and then we're on almost a different plane, really, just looking to blood players to see new people. Just that attitude that we have compared to what they're doing.
I don't know. Like, it's mad. It's different in Wales. You know, they just seem to be around the place the whole time, and they can, and the majority of them
hanging are, around the place.
No, they're playing in England, and they pick them off. You know, everyone goes on, you know, about some of the talent, but I came across Josh Adams playing with Worcester, and all of a sudden he's going well, and they put him back into the Cardiff Blues. So. Let's hope for it. It is unfortunate we're one game down in the Six Nations, but hopefully we should have a great weekend of rugby.
We were mentioned at the top as well that we now have Ireland's fixtures for the Rugby World Cup 2023, and it does feel like a really long time away. But at the same time, probably when you're in the squad and you're playing a Six Nations and you're in a cycle, are you thinking, I want to head off to Bordeaux now in 2023?
Getting out the calendar and marking off the 9th of September 2023, you're not. But I did get a shiver when I saw our first game was in Bordeaux. I was like, oh, just the memories of that
work. Is it?
The last World Cup, we were there in 2007. It didn't go well. We were staying down there. We were in a miserable... I don't want to blame the hotel, but we were just miserable within the hotel. None of us were really happy. It was just such a horrible time. So let's hope we've a better experience with this World Cup. But yeah, you're right. Pencil it in. The 9th of September 2023, we'll get underway against the European qualifiers, which is more slightly Russia. And then we'll take on the Asian or Pacific nations, either Tonga or Samoa, then into South Africa before Scotland. So I think we knew the fixtures. It's probably the run of how you get the games. So, they would be deemed as weaker opposition leading into two big matches. So good to see. Marie, I was lifted today, though, to see Offaly's and Burr RFC's Jack Regan. I know you speak an awful lot about him and you were massively interested in him. Well, today he made his Super Rugby debut for the Highlanders. They lost to the Crusaders 26-13. But to be fair to him, he had a massive game. And I actually feel bad about this because I was lucky to be able to watch it, because I can go on one of the old... There's no Super Rugby on at the moment, which is really disappointing, especially for him. His family would love to see it. And I was thinking, with all the second rows, of all the games we mentioned this weekend, he's probably getting the best experience. He went up against Scott Barrett and Sam Whitelock today. You know, for a 23-year-old second row, you can't be in then. And like, we always have the conversation, we need to spread the net a little bit. Well, let's keep an eye out for him and let's see how he goes. And it was great for him to see him get his run. And obviously it was in the Otago Stadium, which is full to the rafters and full of students. It's noisy. It's kind of made of this plastic corrugated kind of stuff. But just the noise it generates. So fair play to him. And I hope everyone in Borough RFC is incredibly proud of him.
Yeah, well, I think we should get him on the show next week because I'm dying to hear all about it. And even just what life is like down there. I'd say it's a little bit different to what it is here at the moment.
51552, if you've Jack's number.
All right, let's take a very quick break and then we're back with football.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Green Firm's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
So today, the new head of the FAI, Jonathan Hill, said that he would love nothing more than to see Ireland beat Portugal to qualify for the World Cup in front of a packed Aviva Stadium in November 1st. And I couldn't agree more with him. He had his first meeting today with the media and Dave Kelly spoke to him for us.
Look, my management style is a very open and transparent one. You know, I come from Yorkshire, the north of England. I like to think that I am honest, transparent and straightforward. I'm not afraid to take difficult decisions, and I understand that that will need to be done as we move forward. But as I say, having had 25 years of experience within the football world and 10 years of those at the English Football Association, I'm aware of many of the challenges and the debates that go on with any within any football community, if you like. So having knowledge of that and having experience of that, I think helps me both listen to those debates, but also to take a strong position in relationship to that. Is it easy doing that via the gift of team and Zooms? Well, not as easy as it would be if you were sat in a room looking eye to eye to someone, and that's my style, and that's what I'm really looking forward to. And I think I expect with many other people and people who are running businesses and our staff as well, we long to get back to a normal routine and back into our offices. But for now, we manage the situation as best as we can do. And generally, I don't think there's any conversation or debate that I've not been able to be part of, even though I've been doing it, broadly speaking, from my base here in London up till now. But the plan is very much to get across to Dublin.
It would be understandable if morale among FAI staff was very low when you came in because of what's gone on in the past. Have you found that to be the case?
I haven't found that to be the case, actually, Dave. No, I've now spoken, I think, to over 150 of the staff. I genuinely believe that they too share the desire of the wider Irish public and of our stakeholders, that they want to see a stronger and more vibrant and more confident Football Association of Ireland moving forward. And look, we can't take away what's happened over the last 18 months, and clearly that has an effect on the staff. But I've seen some real positivity, and clearly there's a huge commitment from all of those staff, particularly during these difficult COVID working times, to drive things forward. So genuinely, my answer is no. I think that there is a real optimism about the future, and I want to tap into that, and I want to give all of those staff the tools and the platform to be able to help me and the board drive the organisation forward.
A significant announcement last night regarding the League of Ireland in terms of broadcasting contracts for the future. Just give me an overall view of the League of Ireland and where you think it needs to be and has to be improved.
Yeah, well, look, first of all, we are really thrilled to have announced last night the new agreement with RTE to broadcast our games live, but also to work with RTE to deliver the Watch LOI streaming service, which clearly is important as a service to our fans in a world where we still will need to play games behind closed doors. So that's point one. I'm really happy that we were able to announce that. And actually, in relation to the Women's National League and the First Division, we will be streaming games live for the first time, and those women's games will be available for everyone to watch without cost, which I think it is another positive move. I believe that the League of Ireland has huge potential moving forward, and I want to work with the clubs and have already started working with the clubs to work through how we can realise that potential. And I've ruled nothing in and nothing out in relation to those discussions. We all want to see improved facilities for the League of Ireland clubs. We all want to see the standard of football improved on an ongoing basis. And I think if we have that, we can continue to talk around the League of Ireland narrative. I think it's a very unique league. It's clearly very different from other leagues, the Premier League, whatever. And I think we play to its strengths moving forward. So I'm confident about the future of the League of Ireland, but clearly there's a lot of work still to be done.
Just in terms of the international team, the men's international team, obviously, again, for a variety of reasons, it's been a difficult start for Stephen Kenny. He clearly is looking at a long-term, almost a rebuild of how the whole culture of football is played and that how that feeds into the international team. But clearly, you know, qualification for tournaments is vitally important to the association. So will he be given time to get this right? Because obviously it's not going to be a quick fix.
No, look, and Stephen and his team have my and the board's absolute support in relation to that journey, if you like. Because of COVID, we have a pretty unique year ahead of us in the sense that World Cup qualification is going to actually be decided potentially within a calendar year. That's the first time that's ever happened. And of course, that brings with it a number of challenges. Three-game international windows have never been seen before. And that's a challenge physically for the players, particularly when they have to sit within the bubble of the hotel environment, if you like. And I think we all know the challenges that Stephen and the team had at the back end of 2020 in relation to COVID issues, injuries, suspensions, family bereavements, etc. And as always, you hope that Stephen will have the majority of his squad available for him as he starts the campaign. I think we're all excited and again committed and supportive of Stephen's view of how the national teams should play its football, and we genuinely believe that that will deliver results across the World Cup qualification campaign.
And finally, Jonathan, we've seen a lot of progress with the women's national team in recent years. And again, a significant announcement during the week regarding Vera Powell.
Yeah, look, I'm thrilled that we have a new arrangement with Vera moving forward. I think not only is she a fantastic coach and she's done great work with the senior women's team, and we're desperately unlucky not to qualify for the Euros. I think she's an inspiration for all women and girls, actually, in relation to Irish football. And genuinely, I believe she's an inspiration for Irish football, full stop. She's an incredible woman, and she's a force of nature. And I want to harness that energy and that enthusiasm for the Irish game from Vera, but also from many other people across the whole of the Irish football community, because genuinely, I believe that there's a real desire to see a successful FAI and successful Irish teams, both men and women. And we want to see a thriving League of Ireland. And you know what? Above all else, we all want to see football being played again at all levels, across grassroots in particular. And no one will be more excited than myself when we see our youngsters back out and playing football once we're allowed to do that safely moving forward.
Now, that was Jonathan Hill, the new head of the FAI, speaking to RTE's Dave Kelly. I'm joined now by Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan, and we're going to get your reaction to that interview shortly, lads. But first of all, there was a bit of news just before we came on air. We now know that Damien Duff's replacement is Chelsea coach Anthony Barry. He has just been appointed. It's been described as a left-field choice. It's a very interesting one. He was a right-hand man to Frank Lampard and has been kept on now by Thomas Tuchel, and he's going to have dual roles. Alan, to you first. Do you know much about him? Have you heard much about him?
Very little bits, to be honest with you, Marie. He comes with a lot of pedigree, obviously, off the back of the fact that he had a playing career himself, now albeit with lower league clubs, but he played nearly 300 league games, which is no mean feat. And then he had a good little spell with Paul Cook for 3 years at Wigan, and obviously they got promotion during that time as well. So that enabled him obviously to get the move to with Frank Lampard. So he obviously has something about him if he was able to get a move to obviously coaching at that level. And not only since Frank Lampard has left, Thomas Tuchel has decided to keep him on the staff as well. So it is a bit of a left field appointment. It's one that probably, I think we were all in the dark as to who Stephen was going to appoint, trying to fill the void of Damien, because it's a big void to fill, as we've mentioned many times. But I think it's a good one. And the fact that he's coming with a lot of pedigree, as we said, with the clubs that he's worked at. And also he's very young. I think he's only 34 years of age as well, Marie, so he's kind of very much in tune with the modern game and what Stephen will obviously be trying to implement as well. So I think it's a good appointment and good luck to the man.
Fergal, a lot of pedigree and a lot of experience, obviously, as Alan was saying there. But that dual role, is that a good thing? That day to day he sees what's going on, spots the trends and how to improve the team. Sorry, I've lost Fergal, have we?
We don't have Fergal. Oh, we have Fergal.
Apologies. He's in Congress.
Yeah, that's a big thing that Frank Lampard did touch on during his time as Chelsea boss. And he essentially said that they were able to split the role between the two of them because obviously Lampard's position demanded that he had to speak to the media, that he had to deal with huge amounts of work relating to the data they run and of Chelsea Football Club. And Anthony was in a position to look at working with the players on an individual basis and do a lot of opposition scouting. That was the primary role that he undertook. And I think when you look at his situation that he's coming into with Ireland and the issues that Stephen Kenny has had in his first few months, the teething problems with getting his playing style through to the players and looking to translate that onto performances on the pitch, if you can then, you know, put an enormous amount of other work onto somebody else to say, I trust you to scout the opposition so that we have all the information there to set ourselves up to play against them, it can only be helpful. And obviously, as Alan mentioned, he does have pedigree. He's a Football League player. He's had a long career, maybe not as star-studded as other people. He's definitely not got as much of a big name in Premier League football as Damien Duff, but within coaching circles, he is quite well-respected. And Lampard, as I say, was very, very impressed with him and trusted him with a lot of things that he simply didn't have the time to deal with. And with regards to Thomas Tuchel coming in, I think his kind of focus has been on dealing with defence, and obviously that's been a big thing of Tuchel so far. They've only conceded two goals. And it's interesting to note that he's the only person in Lampard's senior coaching staff that Tuchel has kept on.
That is very interesting to note. And just listening to Jonathan Hill there, Alan, do you get the sense that, OK, it has been a bit of a rocky time. Results didn't go the way that everybody wanted or expected or hoped. A few staff members have stepped away, but that's parked. We're looking ahead now. There are going to be World Cup qualifiers coming up and he wants to stay positive, try and get results and try and get qualified.
Yeah, I've enjoyed that interview, I have to say, Marie, and there's a lot of positivity coming out of it, and it's good to see because it makes a very welcome change as to what has gone before. So I think Jonathan Hill speaking to the media today, and it was a very impressive press conference, and I think it bodes well for going forward. Obviously, Dave touched on the announcement last night with RTE and the fact that we've the live games and the streaming service as well. More positives, which is brilliant. Also covering the First Division games and the Women's National League. It's absolutely brilliant for everybody involved. And for once, well, not for once, but in a long, long time, Ray, I think there's a genuine appetite from the top at the FEI, the top people, obviously Jonathan and his staff, that there is an appetite there that they want things to improve. Now, I would temper that with a little bit of caution. We've been here before. It's up to them now to deliver on the promises that they're making. But as I say, the fact that the appetite is there, I think that bodes well for everybody involved. And even from speaking to people on the ground who've been involved in a lot of the meetings with Jonathan and the FEI staff that are there and trying to get all these things in place in the build-up to the new season, they genuinely feel as though there's change coming, and that can only be a good thing.
Alan, I was excited today when I heard the news of the SSA, Electricity Premier League and the streaming service as well, just purely for your outfits, man. I was there.
I've plenty lined up, don't you worry, Donegan. This time 3 weeks, I'll be ready to rock.
But isn't it great, we've a date, Shamrock Rovers Dundalk.
No, it's brilliant. It is, Donica. And this should be, like, we shouldn't really be kind of having to celebrate these things. This should be the norm, but that's kind of where we've been at, obviously. Now, we're coming off a very low base where things were with the FEI, and we all know that, and hopefully that's all in the past. So I think there's stuff there that can honestly get a lot of pats on the back for Jonathan Hill and his staff quite early, and with the likes of this, and obviously this broadcast deal, the fact that we have Watch LOI as well. All these are positives, but they should be always in place, Donica. But as I say, hopefully moving forward, the biggest thing for me coming out of that interview was the positivity and how much the appetite is there that they want things to improve and they want things to get better. And I think that can only be good for everybody at football at all levels in the country.
Yeah, and it was great to hear that the morale is in a good place as well, because obviously all the staff out in the FAI have been through a very tough time. And now, Fergal, we are going to be looking at the Chelsea-Man United game, I think with a little bit of added interest, although it is box office in itself, with Thomas Tuchel and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer coming up against each other.
It is. This is one of them games when you look at a Premier League schedule a few weeks in advance that you kind of mark it on the calendar and say, I'm definitely going to watch that. I'm going to clear that little bit of a space on a Sunday afternoon to look at it. And I think based on how Thomas Tuchel has started so far as Chelsea boss, we kind of want to see him in one of these games. It's obviously not a local derby, but you probably would put this down as a Premier League derby, given the history and the types of positions that these two clubs have been in the past. And I think it will be a test of him. I've been quite impressed with him so far, particularly defensively. He's made Chelsea a lot tighter at the back. They're a lot more difficult to break through. And against the Manchester United team, who are still obviously right in the middle of the race for the top four, they kind of can't really seem to tick it off that they're absolutely going to be right in the middle of it. And I think it's going to be a bit of a clash of styles. United, we know, have got a lot of pace in attack. Martial, Rashford, Marcus Greenwood, if he comes back in. So it'll be interesting to see whether Tuchel changes the way that he plays in order to not let United influence the game so much. I'm really looking forward to it, and I think it will be, in a very different way, probably the biggest test that he's had so far since coming into the Premier League.
Alan, the fight for top four is incredible at the moment, and Man City taking on West Ham, that should really add to it.
Should be a cracker, yeah. Man City are untouchable at the moment, Donegal, obviously playing in Europe, winning as well. So I think they've taken the run now to 19 games unbeaten and winning the 19 as well. It's phenomenal, it really is. And West Ham are having an unbelievable season in their own kind of regard as well. And David Moyes doing a brilliant job. So it's a brilliant game to kick off the weekend. I think West Ham will give Man City a game. Whether they'll beat them, I'm not so sure. But I think it's a bit of a free hit for West Ham, because nobody expects them to beat them anyway. And they have been the surprise package of the season. And I think if West Ham were to finish fourth, I think that would be an as good achievement as Man City winning the league, because nobody would have given them a prayer being not only being in the top four, but to finish there and maintain it as well. So that's the challenge for Moyes now, whether they can sustain the challenge and finish top four. I don't think they can, but the fact that it goes on, the longer it goes on and they keep up there, they're giving themselves every hope. So I'm really looking forward to this one as well.
And he ruled himself out of the Celtic job as well, so he's completely focused on that.
I think that was a wise move as well, Marie. Things are going well from there.
Absolutely. Leicester and Arsenal, I think it's quite an interesting one. And you'd have to look at Brendan Rodgers and think, is he the happiest manager in the Premier League after Pep? Fergal.
Yeah, I think when you look at where Leicester are, and obviously Alan's touched there on West Ham and this lack of pressure and how that's helping them, still within the top four conversation, even though Leicester have won the Premier League more recently than many teams in the Premier League, there's still this sense that they don't have as much pressure on them as a Manchester United or a Liverpool or a Thomas Tuchel's Chelsea, and that's absolutely playing into his hands. They had a bit of a bump in the road in midweek, getting knocked out of the Europa League by Slavia Prague, but every time you watch Leicester, whether it's a home, whether it's away, you know that whoever they're up against, they're going to cause huge problems. And I think up against an Arsenal team that have really struggled, particularly at the start of 2021, the chances of them even qualifying for the Europa League for next season are fading by the week. And I think Leicester enjoy that. They still have this mentality on the back of that title win of no one expects us to do this, and that's how we like it. And that will play into their hands. Jamie Vardy, any Arsenal fan will tell you, is kind of runs through their nightmares. He's had more goals against them than any other team since he's become a Premier League player. I think it's 12 in 20. And he'll be licking his lips at the chances of putting another one over them and just kind of looking to keep them in the top four. They don't want to get themselves into a situation that they had at the back end of last season where Manchester United beat them on the last day and they just got squeezed out of it. Rodgers will be telling his players between now and the end of the season, let's not be in that kind of last chance saloon. We want to be in the Champions League next season, because based on the performances this season, that they deserve to be there.
Okay, Alan and Fergal, thanks so much for joining us. A quick word on Liverpool. Jordan Henderson ruled out for up to 10 weeks as a result of that groin injury he suffered against Everton. They are playing against Sheffield United on Sunday, and you know that it's not in things aren't in a good place when they're not getting top billing on our Premier League chat. We're going to take a quick break and then we're back with Shane Mangan.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, 3 weeks at Cheltenham, but there's quality racing as always this weekend, and we're delighted to be joined by Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very good.
Good stuff. Jane, you're in Fairy House tomorrow covering it. Can you tell us what you're looking forward to there?
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to actually getting out and getting to the races. Last week we were rescheduled and we were obviously waterlogged in many parts. And that then has subsequently led to the Red Mills trial hurdle being moved from Gorn Park, which was meant to be last week, to Fairy House tomorrow. And I'm very much looking forward to it. There's only six runners, but there's a couple of very interesting horses. Jason the Militant for me is the most interesting, and he's got the highest rating in there. Last year's, or actually the 2019 winner and last year's second, Durasso is back for some more with the blinkers applied first time for Joseph O'Brien, and Six Shooter, a very interesting and intriguing competitor as well for Noel Mead. Not, we have to mention Teddy Mouchoir as well. The card opens though with a very good juvenile hurdle last year, won by Burning Victory when she was making her stable debut for Willie Mullins. We know what she did on her next start. She was very fortunate when Goshen came down at the last hurdle. She went on to win the triumph. The highlight of the card tomorrow is the Bobby Joe Chase. That is a small field of five runners. Last year's winner, Acapella Bourgeois, lines up again. My eye is going to be on Annabelle Fly, though. We haven't seen him since March last year. He's likely to be targeted at a tilt at the Aintree Grand National. He's been fourth at Aintree. He's been fifth at Aintree. But I hope he can run well tomorrow and give connections some hope that he can do the business in April this year. Look, Willie Mullins has won the last five renewals of the Bobby Joe Chase. He's won eight of the last 10. Acapella Bourgeois and Borough Saint are his representatives this year, and I'm sure they're going to be hard to beat.
And then if we move on to Nace on Sunday, Jane.
Yes, the main race in Nace is Celius Emery. Having won the Red Mills trial last year, he's been had a checkered campaign over fences. He was one of the leading novices of his year before he got knocked out before Cheltenham. Didn't get to run in the Arkle. And I think this is a match race between himself and Daily Tiger, who was very smart in handicap company. Just 3 runs ago, Daily Tiger beat Tornado Flyer and Castle Vaughan West at Punchestown. We know what Castle Vaughan West did at Leopardstown at Christmas. That's a good race there. And we must mention, best of luck to Emmett Mullins tomorrow at Kempton. Cape Gentleman runs in the Dovecot Novice Hurdle at 3 o'clock. He's a capable horse in the flat, and I hope he can do the business in Grade 2 company over hurdles for the Carlo trainer.
Absolutely. Jane, as always, thank you so much. Enjoy Fairy House tomorrow. I know you always love getting out, but to be at live sport, everyone's quite jealous.
And it's sunny.
And it's sunny.
And it's sunny. Isn't such a privilege.
Jane's from Cork. She's well used to it.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks, Jane. Talk to you next week. Marie, Connors, that's all we have time for, but you need to give us a very quick update on the Connacht
14
match.
14-all, it looks a belter of a game. It's on TG Carr. Flick it on if you're around the house. It looks an incredible game, and let's hope for brilliant sport this weekend. Have a great weekend. The brilliant blonde Tracy is up next.
Live across the nation, this is 48 2FM.